Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.
10 seconds.
He rolls into it.
Wow, he might get it. Take it.
Way of the Warrior.
One of his legs could fight at welterweight, I'm sure.
Probably.
Roll mount, here's some ground, and pound by O'Gara.
I think the first 2 minutes were everything we thought it was going to be, and then after that, it was the surprise of the night.
If it happens in MMA, you hear about it here. Your MMA show, Way of the Warrior.
It is Way of the Warrior. Eric Hultgren, along with Ross Kingsbury. We are talking this time around, and Ross, again, thank you for joining us to talk a little MMA. But wanted to talk to you because I don't know if you just knew what was happening in the tea leaves, but about a week ago, you wrote an article about the rise of Bellator, and then here we are 7 days later, and it's odd to say this, but I was telling a friend today that, hey, I'm gonna do the show this week, and for the first time, I think, in history, I'll probably only talk about Bellator on an MMA podcast.
Yeah, that's kind of an unexpected thing. I just think that they got a lot going on for them right now, and I didn't really know about anything that was happening. It's just the fact that, you know, there's all these free agents out there and everything, and they're picking up people pretty quickly too. So things are going pretty good for Bellator.
Well, they're picking up people quickly, and it seems like they're moving in the right direction. Now, there was the rumors this week that Spike will eventually change its name from Spike TV to Paramount, which...
Yeah, and they said that that shouldn't hurt their brand any, so I wonder exactly how that's going to go.
Not like Spike was helping their brand, so I don't know that that'll be wrong or right. But what I've been endlessly impressed with is they're moving. It seems like anyway they're moving away from, you know, the freak fights of Elite XC and moving more into things like the announcement this week between Paul Daly and Rory McDonald, which I think is a fascinating fight to see happen in any organization, and certainly Bellator.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I was fully expecting Paul Daly an MVP, though, to be honest.
And you know, that it's funny you say that, because that's the second thing I said. It's like, man, I would love to see Rory beat him, except I really want to see Paul Daly an MVP.
Yeah, and all that talk from MVP on social media and everything, it kind of had everybody thinking that it was going to go that way too, and then just kind of out of nowhere. I mean, they had to do something with Rory McDonald anyways, and it's kind of what they were expecting to do, was get him put up against Paul Daly, it seemed like. So
yeah, and you've got Ryan Bader floating out there. I mean, there has been no official announcement, but it looks like he might be headed to Bellator. You, of course, have the Mitrione Fedor fight out there, which will certainly bring some eyeballs. And I think the most astute thing about your article is, of course, that all of these fights are free on Spike TV. And, you know, in a juxtaposition to what's happening this weekend on the UFC, where they're asking us to pay $60 for something that really probably is barely worth $20, you know, that becomes an interesting proposition, is how to build their brand. Because with Viacom dollars, and actually, to your point, the rebrand of a new TV channel, how much more money will they sink to the promotion of one of their flagship entities in Bellator with all of these former UFC fighters that they have coming over, or who have come over already?
Exactly. And as a fan, I mean, I like to see fights. And most of the time, I can't afford to buy the pay-per-views, so I don't get to see, you know, some of these pay-per-views until they come out on, you know, Fight Pass or something like that. I have to go back and rewatch something I already know who wins, because I, you know, follow all these people on social media. I mean, you got gifts coming out left and right at the fights and everything, and which that's kind of nice. You at least get an idea of what's going on. But there's some cards that you do put the money down for, you know.
What are the ones that get you excited? Like, where are the ones where you make that decision? Because, you know, it's not as if $60 is cheap regardless of what you do. So, what are the things, Ross, that you go, yep, that's the one we're going to watch?
Like, they put a lot into UFC 205.
Absolutely.
And that was one that got me. I mean, my wife's a big Conor McGregor fan, so we kind of really can't miss any of those. But like ones that just out of the blue that I'm going to pick up are like UFC 211 coming up in Dallas with Stipe versus Junior Dos Santos and Rothwell versus Werdum. I mean, I think that's going to be a pretty good card too. And who else are they talking about putting on that card? Possibly Michael Bisping and Yoel Romero. I mean, that's that's going to shape up to be something really good right there if, you know, Romero and Bisping get put on the card as well.
Well, and that Romero this week calling into Bisping's radio show, it's nice to see other fighters kind of understanding how the game is played and jumping.
Yeah, Romero's a complete savage.
And mildly insane, which is okay, but it makes for some really interesting back and forth between
those
two.
Oh, yeah, really interesting.
What do you think that fight will be like when it happens?
Romero's going to probably dominate Bisping. I mean...
You're a fan then?
I don't know if I'm so much of a fan. I just got an idea of him going to win the fight. I mean, there's a lot of crap that Romero has done in the past where, you know, he stayed sitting on the stool versus the Tim Kennedy fight. He wouldn't get up, you know, and Big John actually had to pull him up off the stool and get the stool out of the octagon. And then you have his trainers in there pouring water all over him, and they can't be doing that. And then,
right.
Him failing that drug test after the Jacare fight he's just kind of a, you know, you can't really trust the guy, but he's an absolute beast. I mean, you can't really pick against him in the Bisping fight.
Assuming he stays clean, right?
Yeah.
Which leads us, of course, I wanted to spend a couple minutes this week talking very quickly about UFC 208. As I said, it's clearly not worth the price of admission. And even the fights that are mildly interesting, I'm a little unexcited and a bit unsure of. You know, the main one being the Brunson Silva fight, because I just don't understand why they hate Anderson Silva so much.
Yeah, his last four fights that he's been in.
Yeah, one. Well, it's not like regardless of. To go back and say, you know, are casual fans going to buy this one? Probably not. But if they did, they wouldn't know who Derek Brunson is. And then they're going to watch this guy who they don't know who it is probably end the career of Anderson Silva.
Yeah, it's very possible. Brunson's got, you know, pretty good knockout power. But from things that I've noticed in the past that people pointed out on Twitter, that Brunson likes to kind of leave his chin hanging out there a little bit. So who knows? I mean, Silver might surprise everybody and, you know, get one of them front kick KOs like he did against Belfort, you know.
You just never know.
Does
that put him in resurgence territory or just put his retirement on hold?
I would say probably put his retirement on hold. I don't really see him making another championship run, especially at 41 years old. I mean, it's kind of a little bit past his prime. I mean, it's good to see him, you know, still fighting, and he's fighting because he loves the game and everything. But, you know, his time's going to come to an end fairly soon.
And the rest of the card, like I said, it's interesting, but there's a lot of, probably the most high-stakes fight on this card is the Jacare-Tim Bosch fight, because Jacare is clearly in line for a title fight and has to put all of that on, you know, on hold to put it on the line against a guy like Tim Bosch, which... I know Jacare said this a couple times this week, but he literally is putting everything on the line this weekend for, like I said, a card that I don't know that a lot of people are running to check out.
Yeah, Jacare, he just, you know, it sounded like he really wanted to fight. He put out that fake Craigslist ad because, you know, he just wasn't getting anything after the Rockhold fight fell through. And then they eventually put him on this card against Tim Boach, which I did think that was kind of an odd pairing, really. I mean, Tim Boach, this is going to be his last fight on this contract. So you know that they're banking on Jacare to probably win this fight, so that way they don't renew Boach's contract, which, you know, that would lead to him probably going to Bellator. But then again, you know, I'm picking an upset here because I totally think that Boach is going to go in there and surprise everybody and knock Jacare out.
Man, that would be such a bummer. That would be such a bummer.
It would. It would be a bummer for Jacare big time.
Well, I just think in general, because, like... Me, I'm obviously a fan of the sport, but I'm also a fan of the stories. And for a guy like Jacare to watch how far his striking has come and how he's been able to put the whole thing together to have to take such a huge step backwards if he loses to Bosch this weekend would be just a bummer if it turns out that he had to take the fight because, of course, he needs to eat and needs to get paid, and that stuff probably isn't happening. He's not getting sponsored by Nike or anything like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That sucks because he was, like, right in title contention, too.
Well, and he
could have been anybody.
And you and I are talking. He currently still is. But I don't know that Sunday morning that we'll be having the same conversation.
Yeah, because who's to say that he's even going to get the next shot, too? I mean, a win against Tim Boach really doesn't say, hey, that, you know, I'm next in line. when you got like Whitaker, or no, it's not Whitaker, Musasi and Wyman, they're going to end up fighting.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember what card that was on. 209, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's something like that. I'll look it up here as we're talking. But yeah, and that's, again, the shame of 85 right now is that it looks as if you've got Weidman and Musasi, as you said, they're fighting in April. And even if Jacare wins, you know, he's trying to stay busy or needs the fight or a combination of the two. But beating Tim Bosch, as you just said, doesn't move you closer. In fact, it might move you backwards.
Yeah. There's a big possibility of that.
So, and then, like you were talking in your article about this card, you've got Glover Teixeira taking on a guy that most people don't even know who he is. And Jared Cannonier, 9-1, and a guy who's clearly on the up and coming. And Glover,
yeah.
You know, Glover at number three, which is always interesting with this weight class, because being number three while we all wait for John Jones to come back and get his belt is not really a real number three, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely. And it's coming, like, in my eyes, from what I've been seeing, too, is that the UFC is doing a little bit too quickly with their prospects. Like, when they put Mike Perry up against Alan Jabon, he lost. And then Sage Northcutt against Mickey Gall, and he lost. And then Michelle Waterson and Van Zant lost. Well, here's going to be probably another case of that. You hate to see it happen to them, because they're trying to push these younger stars as fast as they can. But, I mean, Glover is going to be a really tough matchup for Cannonier.
He is going to be a tough matchup, and if something happens to Cannonier, like you said, that's going to stall it out. It's one of the reasons I was talking about Nagano and hoping that they pump the brakes a bit on him, because he's another guy who I think would be amazing a year from now, and I just don't want to see them go, you're awesome and people are paying attention, therefore you should fight Stipe next, right? Because I don't think he's ready for that.
Yeah, and Ngannou's been calling for Cain Velasquez, which I think that would be a really good fight for him.
It would be, but I personally would like to see one more test before we get there, because I don't want to ruin these guys. I mean, I'm not saying that Jared Cannonier and Ngannou are like leagues ahead of where Sage Northcutt is, right?
Yeah.
But I still don't want to see the same thing happen to them.
Yeah.
Because now you've got, like, because then you get in this weird situation where you have people with 0-2 records calling out CM Punk through some weird Sage Northcutt time continuum where people feel they still get shots in the UFC because Sage isn't really the real, you know, it's the whole thing is just really weird when you're dealing with, well, Sage in general. But as far as prospects go, Cannonier against Glover, again, you've got a card that people might not be tuning into casually. You've got two fighters that people might not know who they are. And if Cannonier loses to Glover, what does he do now?
Exactly. I mean, what was his last two fights were on Fight Pass, too, weren't they?
Yep, they were.
I believe they were.
Which tells you just about everything you
need. He'll send him back down to Fight Pass, and the next thing you know, he'll probably end up like Rick Story and Marin Larkin and Takagiya Mizaki today and get probably kicked off the roster.
Or you'll end up like OSP, right? I mean, he fought for the title, and he's on Fight Pass most times, you know? And that leads us to the story that we were talking about right before we hit record, which was Dana White, I believe, is on ESPN today talking about Cyborg Santos and saying, hey, good news, guys. It looks like she's just going to have to pay a fine or something like that. It's not going to be suspended. Or she'll get an exemption, I think it was his actual word. Which what that means is that this title fight at 145 in the newly crowned women's division that will have its first bout tomorrow between Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamé is essentially, might as well be the interim title fight, right?
Yeah, I would say so. It just, it doesn't really bring attention like Cyborg versus Holm would have. You know, I think they didn't really want to wait for Cyborg to get cleared. That way they can start this division, but they know that it's going to be Cyborg's division, so they probably want to get her in there as fast as they can, put her up against the title, and hopefully their outcome, their wanting, is to have Cyborg as champion.
Yeah, but I guess, okay, so let's play a fun game, right? You run a blog about MMA. We do a podcast about MMA. Name for me another women's featherweight fighter in the UFC who isn't Holly Holm, Cyborg, or Jermaine Durandamé.
Not in the U.S. or in the UFC, I can't really think of. I know Amanda Nunes has been talking about moving up so that way she can challenge the winner of this, but I really can't think of another one. Who I can think of, though, is Megan Anderson from Invicta. She's talked about coming to the UFC, and, I mean, they need to have people on the roster. Could be a time to move her up.
It could be, but so let's finish this fun game to kind of make my point, right? If you go to the UFC and you go to the women's featherweight division, there are two fighters there, Holly Holm and Jermaine Durandamé. So my point in all this is, if you wanted to wait for Cyborg, then wait for Cyborg. No one is pounding down your door going, please start this division, please start this division, except for maybe Holly Holm. And so to start this division and expect people to pay $60 for this in the same way that you think they would pay $60 to see Ronda Rousey come back.
It all comes back to, I think, the UFC wanting to have a championship for a pay-per-view. And I think that they saw a hole that they needed to fill, and they thought, hey, let's just go ahead and put this together, you know, throw it in there, and then once the Cyborg comes back, then we'll do with it what we want to.
And of course, I get it, but I was really excited to talk to you today because I really wanted to get your sense about this, because I felt as of late that ever since the new year came around, so when we ended the Amanda Nunes Ronda Rousey fight and we launched into 2017, it has really felt like it is absolutely a different organization than it was in 2016. It doesn't feel like all the T's are crossed or the I's are dotted. It feels like the matchmaking has taken a serious jump backwards, in my opinion. And the nonsensical bookings and nonsensical ways in which they execute events, and some of it they've lucked into, right? Like some of these events with people that you're not super excited to fight, or see fight, I should say, turn out to be really exciting events. Some of them not so much. And so I'm wondering your thoughts on the tempo and the cadence of this in respect to your Bellator article of where you think the UFC is in 2017 as we're going through month number two.
2017 is going to be a pretty rough year for the UFC. I mean, they had a record-breaking year last year in pay-per-view sales, but that was when they had all their stars that, you know, could come out and perform. Matchmaking, they're doing the right matches and everything. It's just it doesn't have a lot of power like they did last year with, you know, I'm blanking right now.
Well, I mean, you know, when you get Connor three times, right? You get Ronda.
Yeah.
You know, you got Ronda essentially two, right? It was December to December. You did get, you got one John Jones fight and then he got in trouble again, right? So you had these guys at least showing up, where right now, we don't really know when John is coming back. We don't really know if Connor's coming back or when he's coming back or if he's going to boxing or what of that is true and what of that is false. Ronda is never coming back. You have Stipe and JDS booked, right? You've got Cormier and Rumble booked. We're thinking...
They got Aldo and Holloway booked.
You've got Aldo and Holloway booked
12.
Today, right? You've got Bisping and Romero perhaps booked. You've got Woodley and Wonderboy booked. And then outside of that, you're left with Amanda Nunes, JJ, Garbrandt, and DJ that don't have matches. None of those guys will sell a pay-per-view for you.
No, they won't.
And I would argue, and feel free to send me hate mail, everyone who's listening, I will argue that Daniel Cormier doesn't sell pay-per-views either.
Yeah, it's... Cormier is a tough sell, I think, too. I agree with you on that one. It's John Jones's division, in my eyes.
Yeah, and you know, that's not to say, guys, that I'm not interested to see DC and Jones a second time, because Jones has never had a rematch. And that alone makes me really want to see that fight if that ever comes to fruition. However, if he comes back and he takes the belt back, in essence, to me, Ross, that just exemplifies what we thought the entire time, that Daniel was a paper champion who never actually won the belt from the guy he couldn't beat.
Exactly. And who knows? I mean, they got UFC 210 coming up with him versus Rumble, and I'm almost betting that Rumble's probably going to end up finishing him in that fight. So we might not even see Cormier versus Jones again.
Which would be a shame. I don't know that I agree with you, but it's interesting enough, especially after this weekend, right, that I will certainly pay to watch that.
Yeah.
So really quickly, before I let you go for this evening, and again, thank you so much for spending some time with us. You wrote an article about the heavyweights in the UFC. Kind of, what is your, give us your state of the state of where you think the heavyweights are right now as we head into this weekend.
I think it's the deepest division that the UFC has other than the middleweight division. And it's a really solid division. There's no interim champions or anything. You got a singular champion in Stipe Miocic taking on Junior Dos Santos. And then you have a really good fight with Rothwell and Werdum. And you got Cain Velasquez in the mix. You got Derek Lewis and Travis Brown having a fight coming up. There's just name after name after name, you know, a rising star in Francis Ngannou doing really well lately. And I just think it's a really great division. I wanted to write about it. And I thought it was a fairly decent article myself, not to pat myself on the back or anything, but it just kind of came to me. And I wrote it in like 20 minutes. I mean, it was that easy to write because it's a really good division right now.
Absolutely, and some really exciting fights. I think a lot of people are excited about what Ngannou is going to do. You know, you almost think, even though he's ranked above him, you almost think like Ngannou and Mark Hunt would be a really interesting fight, I think, before we get to that Cain Velasquez bout. But yeah, it's probably the deepest it's been in some time.
And everybody likes the heavyweights too.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially when you've got these heavyweights, right? Like if you go all the way back 20 years from now or 20 years ago, when you're going through the likes of a Gann McGee or a Tim Sylvia, you know, slow, plodding, very heavyweight mm-hmm. heavyweights, right? That's not who you've got right now. You've got really
exactly.
athletic, explosive individuals. I mean, the top 10 is, like you said, you've got your champ in Stipe, Werdum, Velasquez, Overeem, JDS, Rothwell, Ngannou, Hunt, Lewis, Travis Brown, and Andrei Arlovsky, right? Like,
some stiff competition.
That's an insane amount of human beings. That's like, if you go back to when 55 was a shark's den, right? And not that 55 is easy right now, but the fact that 55 is essentially paused until Conor comes back makes it a little bit less competitive than the heavyweight division.
Yeah, it does.
All right, my man, I've taken plenty of your time and I appreciate that. If people want to check out the blog, where do they find it?
www.primetimemma.sport.blog.
And if they want to hook up with you on Twitter, where do they do that?
Yep, I'm at Broken Ross.
All right, Broken Ross, have an awesome weekend. Thank you again for spending some time with us.
Hey, no problem.
All right, and there he goes. Ross is off. As always, you can find him, Broken Ross, on Twitter. And he's writing some really great stuff at the Primetime MMA blog. This weekend, of course, you've got UFC 208. As you can obviously tell, not much of a fan. I don't think it's worth the $60. And I just don't know if Cyborg is in fact getting just a slap on the wrist and an exemption as opposed to suspended. And I'm not picking one way or the other, but this is almost worse than the Daniel Cormier paper champion and the fact that Holly Holm or Jermaine Durandamé are literally just keeping the belt warm for when Cyborg comes back, which I would hope would be sooner than later, because if you're going to start this division, it's got to get busy and it's got to get busy now. Okay, as always, you can keep up with all of the news that's happening on Facebook and Twitter by searching @WowShow. It's Eric Hulcrin. It is Way of the Warrior. It's your MMA show.